This episode is sponsored by Blue Chew.
Yeah.
You know, let's talk about something we could all use more of right now. Sex, great sex. Now, you should know that's not my copy. That's what they wrote. But yeah. I do agree with it in principle. I think we could all use great sex. And sometimes a fella needs a little help there. And what's better than Blue Chew? I mean, you can now increase your performance, get that extra confidence in bed. BlueChew.com. That's blue like the color blue.
And Blue Chew brings you the first chewable with the same FDA-approved active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis. You can take them anytime, day or night, even on a full stomach. Danny, you yes. had a big meal.
Yeah.
It's totally cool.
Well, because, you know, you go out to dinner with somebody and you're eating and maybe you're having like oysters or tacos.
Or raviolis.
Yes. And so maybe you're full. And now what am I going to do? I want to perform. Can I take it on a full stomach? I can.
But Danny, do you ever worry that you're taking something that's not made in the USA?
Constantly.
But this is USA. I'm here to tell you, USA all the way. It's prescribed online by licensed physicians. So you don't have to go to the doctor, wait in line. And it's even cheaper than a pharmacy. And they prepare and ship it right to you in a discreet package. I know that that's a big thing for you. You're tired of getting...
All of my other weird ointments that come in and it's marked and it's like anal fissure cream and everybody sees it.
This is discreet. It looks like you're getting a book.
Oh, that's great. That's
so you don't even have to leave the house.
And right now we've got a special deal for our listeners. Visit BlueChew.com and get your first shipment free when you use our promo code, the special code Danny, D-A-N-N-Y. I'm so proud. My name is.
I'm so jealous.
Just pay $5 in shipping. Again, that's BlueChew.com, promo code Danny to try it free.
Blue Chew is a better, cheaper choice, and we thank them for sponsoring the Doing It with Danny Zucker and Jenny Johnson podcast. Yes. And remember, when you support our sponsors, you help make this podcast possible. So please be sure to use promo code Danny at BlueChew.com.
DOI:IT. H-D-A-N-N-Y and J-E-N-N-Y. Doing it with Danny and Jenny. Doing it with Danny and Jenny. Doing it with Danny and Jenny. It's a revolution in podcast.
I mean, this has been a long revolution. We become mired in a war. It's like Afghanistan or the Hundred Years War. What do you think?
Or storm at the Capitol. It's a revolution.
It's a revolution. They put mace in my eyes.
That was
welcome
great.
To Doing It with Danny Zucker and the great
Jenny Johnson.
Jenny Johnson.
Hey.
I mean, oh my God, to get
applause,
both of
applause. Oh my God.
It's not
tops on.
We have a great show. Let's fucking get to it. You want to introduce our guest?
I would love to introduce our guest because you've seen him. Don't know who are you?
He's like, I don't know who the fuck this
Literally,
guy is.
We've been talking for 15 minutes before this and I forgot to say, oh, Danny, here, meet our guest.
Well, first you got to introduce our guest though.
I will because I love our next guest. He's a hilarious stand-up comic. You've seen him in The Heat. You've been on Mad TV. Mm-hmm. You were just Vince McMahon on Young Rock. Is this correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Getting the intro?
Going to be.
It's Adam Ray, everybody.
American Vandal, too, by the way. Let's keep
Oh, my
American
God. American Vandal. We
Good
were
show.
About that. That was
Good
one of my
show.
Favorite.
Adam. Oh, yeah.
That was. Thank you for mentioning that, Danny, because
I
did not
it.
Want to forget that. I was
and,
so upset that I wasn't a writer on that show because everyone.
Too.
I had
oh,
more
you
people
crushed.
Texting going, like, is this. Are you a part of this? Dicks on Cars, Jenny? This seems like.
You were in the poop, but you were, if I remember, you were in the poop, the poop season, right?
I was in the second season, but it was all poop, all
a turd burglar.
A turd burglar, man.
That was great too. I mean, I love it. We had Jimmy Tatro on Modern Family for a little while, and I was picking his brain about how that whole fucking thing worked. And,
oh yeah, and yeah. It was that. Appreciate the intro. If you're also one of my mom's Jewish friends from Temple Beth Am. You might want to throw in also the Cowardly Lion in the sixth grade production of The Wizard of Oz at Lake Forest Park Elementary, which to my mom is my greatest performance of all time. Well, it was when I was a. What's
you
that?
You lit up the stage. I mean,
I lit up the stage. I also like it. I was a like we're just talking pre-show about guys, your producer's weight loss. I was a big kid. How big? Well, it was the first time in the history of the Wizard of Oz story that the Cowardly Lion got to Oz and asked for cake instead of courage. I had tits when I was 10. And it was so fucked up is that, you know, when you first start stand up, you're trying to like pull from, you know, what you are, what you know, personal stuff, right? Like I would just always hear like talk about you because right out of the gate, it'll help you find your point of view and your voice and all that. And I went to the Laugh Factory open mic. So right when I graduated from college in LA in 2005, maybe 2 months after. And I was just kind of in and out. I was doing a lot of improv stuff too and wasn't sure if I wanted to. I was 1 foot in, 1 foot out with stand up and improv. And but I was just trying to like do it all and not yet committing fully to stand up like it requires. Like we know now that you got to, you know, give yourself over to it to make any sort of progress. So I was like, well, I'll do open mics every now and then. And the Laugh Factory open mic was like, you know, you sign up at 2:30 on a Tuesday. And you're going up 8 months later on a Wednesday at 8 p.m. So Jamie just fucking, God bless you, but what the fuck? That system is just so jacked. Yeah. So I sign up and I go up and I do this joke about being the first fat kid. And like, first of all, I open with a joke where I'm like, this feels like a lot like my Little League games because my dad's not here. And that would get, it would get all groans and no laughter. And I was like,
no, that's a good joke. They're wrong.
Yeah, people just, you know, feel maybe, I don't know, maybe I, you know, and so then.
Did you get ahead. That all response?
That's yeah. My least and then I was aww. Like, and then I was like, they're not getting back together. It's fine. And then it was like, oh. So then I go first one of the fourth. I was like, I was a fat kid, didn't have all its all the disadvantages. I was the first one in fourth grade to get a set of tits. And then I go, I charge my friend five bucks to fill me up. I go, kick cans were cheap. I go, I help my dad get out of parking tickets, you know, And I get up there and Jamie would give you feedback, right? That was like the whole thing with the Laugh Factory. It was like the owner and creator of the factory will give you immediate critique on your set.
Wow.
So I go upstairs, right? You're not allowed upstairs until you go up after the set, walk right up. And he sits down, he goes, buddy, sit down, buddy. First of all, too much chest hair. I don't know what that is. Are you Persian, Russian, Jewish? Don't Filipino. I don't know what you are, but you're here. It's whatever. You're up there swearing too much, buddy. You're up there. Look at me. Come fuck my tits. Come titty fuck. I go, well, I never said that. And he goes, yeah, you're up there just being like, hey, look at my dad. He's gay and fuck my tits. You can wow. let my dad just doing classic Jamie where he butchers the whole conversation. And he just goes, your dad's like, come fuck my son's tits and give me a Kit Kat and I'll watch my son fuck. And you're like, I didn't say that. That was not the joke. You're mixing
how
it up.
How is that your takeaway? Like, how is that? What the fuck's wrong with you, man?
And I'm not over exaggerating at all, by the way.
I fully can actually see this conversation.
I know you can. Yes, because you're a factory staple. And so I'm like, all right, Jamie, I appreciate the opportunity. It's like, buddy, it's too much. You need to be clean. You need to come back in 20 years. And I'm like, what? No, he's like, come back in like 8 months, which is also a long time. And I'm like, yeah. He's like, clean it up. And I was like, and so dejected. And yeah. Anyway, but I digress. That was though.
But it worked
early
out.
On. And so anyway, being a big kid during the Wizard of Oz, a lot of fun. American Vandal, if that's what you guys were asking about. Yeah. Super fun show. Did you watch it or were you just a fan of the idea?
No, I watched every episode.
I watched it more than once too. Yeah, I loved it. I
watched every episode. I was very much into it. I mean, Jenny and I are huge fans of Jenny got me into The Staircase and into those sort of like crime
docuseries. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so the way that they applied that to the high school with the same gravitas of like a murder was so fantastic. I just
yeah.
Oh, and they had like the string, you know, like here, let's put this person's picture and then string to the next person. And it was like they kept it and they never broke. It was like they kept it like it was the most serious thing that had happened of all time.
It was great. I mean,
it was so good. Not,
in both seasons were fantastic. So
the just the idea of like spoofing a crime doc is also very funny. And also one of those things, at least for me, seeing the first season, I was like, oh, yeah, how has this not been? And maybe it has, just maybe not well, because like they shot the shit out of it as far as like how beautiful it looked.
Yeah.
And then the idea of having the kids trying to solve it and that they're trying to do the whole documentary on it. It was just brilliant from top to bottom. But I knew the guy who directed it, he and I, you know, Adam Devine's a good buddy of mine. And when he started doing his stand-up tours, I'd open for him and we'd go out and do the thing. And then he started doing this stand-up showcase show called Adam Devine's House Party. Yep. And his second season was in New Orleans. And so I'd done the first season. He had to twist Comedy Central's arm to get me on because they were just like, we don't get it. We don't get what that guy's about. He's wearing flannels. He's got weird fucking, you know, I don't know. Again, Jenny, we joked about what that is behind me in my stepdad's office. I'm going to have to ask him. I don't know. I should have figured it out when I hotboxed this place sophomore year of college, which he doesn't know about, by the way. And if he listens to your show, sorry, George, but also don't have a hotboxable office. Yeah.
That's not on you. Maybe that's what's wrong with those people behind you. Maybe you fucking hotboxed them and they just started melting.
Yeah, those were children before I started hotboxing and they just fucking
melted. Yeah.
So the kid who directed American Vandal directed the digital content for House Party season 2 because Adam was like, oh, it'd be cool. We're going to New Orleans. I was like, God damn, we did it in Van Nuys at a house for season 1. Like, way to pick a cool city for the second season. We go down there and this kid, Tony Yacenda, and I were kind of just in charge to do. We're going to do all these interviews with the comics and all this behind the scenes stuff. And eventually Comedy Central was like, just make a fucking trailer for the show. And we're like, all right. So we came up with this idea, had to really be sparing with how much we use Adam and got him to. So funny, by the way, seeing Comedy Central pussyfooted around being like, he's not like, he's shooting, he's producing, he's writing the whole show. It's, you're gonna have to find a way to do it with Adam. And I was like, well, maybe I'll just go ask him because you guys, I guess, can't get it done. So I'm like, hey, man, we came with this great idea. We're going to shoot this dope trailer. Like, can you give me like after one of the days, I'm going to do it in between lunch, like after one of the shoot days or nights, which after he's been going all day doing everything, I go, give me 30 minutes, dude. We'll go around Bourbon Street, get this shit with you. We'll get this, laid it out. He was like, yeah, dude, I got you. And they were like, what? That? Yeah. So, I mean, he was going to get back to us. But it's great that you got him. So we knock it out, whatever. Tony directed that whole thing, very guerrilla style. And then he's doing Vandal. And I'm like, yo, and I see it for a season. I'm like you guys, obsessed. Yeah. And I'm like, if you're doing another season, man, what do I got to do? Who do I got to suck? And he's like, me. And I'm like, not doing it. Thanks for the offer. Yeah, you got a weird wiener. And so I'm in, Adam and I were doing shows in Japan, USO run. And he's like, hey, man, there's this part of a cop, but they want a guy like in his 50s or 60s, like an old husky grizzled. He's like, but if you want to lay that down, that's all I can think of that you maybe could change your mind or whatever. And so it did. And then he said another thing was like, now they want to see you just improvise a scene as a cop. Which was just so fun. Like, there's not too many roles like that where you're like, I don't know, trying to be a serious but funny cop about certain. And I'm sure we all have cops we've known of or DARE officers from back in the day or whoever, where you're like, oh, that is who I'm using as my base for this person because of the way they talked or their stories or whatnot. but so then got it and then did it in Oregon and they just were, I mean, locked in, and the kids were so good. It's almost scary when you see kids that good at acting. You're like, oh man, like you definitely have done some fucked up shit because I'm buying everything you say until the camera stops, and then you're just a weird kid. You know what I'm saying?
I know, but it's like, on my family, the kids were about the same age as my kids, and I was saying, my kids are so fucking useless. Like, look how good, like, you know what these kids are capable of? They really let me down, my own children.
So, how many kids do you have?
I have 3. They're old. So I have a twin, 22-year-old. They're going to be 23 in April. And I have a 19-year-old at your rival, UCLA.
Yikes.
I know.
It's a strong rival, too. Wait, are the twins girls or boys?
They're girls. Not identical. One's really pretty.
So funny having a comic dad, by the way. They're so pumped but so bummed at the same time.
I hate it.
I have 2 parents and one's good.
The one who says mean things, those mean things bought our pool. That's basically how he feels.
Hilarious. Wait, I have twin nieces and they're 11 and I just spent the weekend with them. And we did like a Facebook Live on Saturday, and they're still very cute. They're
Are they identical or fraternal?
Identical, yeah. And they're, you know, my brother-in-law Tim, or by his rapper alias Dirtay. He's white. He's not Eminem. Google.
Oh, is he really a rapper?
Oh yeah.
Oh.
When I when my sister told me, I was like, what? You know, you can go find a dentist or something. And she's like, no, I went to it. And she just was into those types of guys up in North Seattle. The tattooed up, like rough and tumble, you know, drank some Sunny D that was spiked with ecstasy from my sister type vibe. And
my brother-in-law works in the oil and gas industry.
So also cool.
You
also
win.
Cool.
Yours is cool.
Well, do I though? Do I though? The first show I went to, he's rapping about my sister. I didn't know. To my buddy's like, I think that's about her. Where he's like, and if you got and bow down to me and suck my dick, all the bitches in my life gotta suck their dicks, cause that's what you do when you suck that fucking cock. You know, I'm paraphrasing. I don't remember any of the lyrics. But
you know
it was
what? I take it back. I'm happy with my brother-in-law. You
know. You're so pumped on it. So I'm watching this, and then he's like, my buddy's like, I think that's about your sis. I'm like, I don't know. He's like, and I'm like, nah, it can't be, man. He's got probably had a life before her. He's like, and it's all about Natalie, the bitch that I give to thee. And I'm like, oh. And then he's like, and then I'm like, maybe there's another Natalie. He's like, and her brother Adam's in the back. Say what up, man. Put your hands in the, you know. But he has, you know, he's filled the role. But pre him, my nieces, it was just my sis. So I'd come up a lot to try to be a dude influence as much as possible. Any tips on this stage, and obviously pre probably social media, right? Like, so they're all about, we did a Facebook Live, and then all they want to do is do a practice podcast for the next 2 hours. That started a lot of fights, went to the TV, video games. Then we played Heads Up. Then we just chatted, which was crazy.
What's that?
Yeah, what's that? Couldn't hold them for that long until I was just like, we're not doing this and that. Activities they love. We go to the pool. Imagination Station. I mean, it's just like, awesome. That's the best.
Well, did they have phones? Or are they like,
oh yeah, phone? They got it, but not, but my sister just, you know, set down this like point system with chores and earning hours for electronics. Should have done that from the get go, but, you know, with three kids and two of his on other weekends, five sometimes. Ooh. I get why you're just like, here's an iPad, move out. You know what I'm saying? But for you, Dan, like what? Well, I don't know, man. How do you do it? Any tips from here on out?
No, I mean, honestly, I got lucky with my girl, with my kids were just really, they were, I mean, I got lucky. I think they were pretty low impact. They were all pretty good kids. I think the way to rebel against an asshole parent is to be good. And so I think that's what they, I think that's what they did. And I have, I think it also helps, like, if you're not a person who's easy, like, we were pretty lenient in terms of, like, I make sure they all had a good sense of humor. That's, like, the main thing.
Because I love that.
You get to that point at about 12 or 13, and everything embarrasses you. No matter, like, just the idea of even having a parent is embarrassing. It's like, no, they're going to find out I have a dad. Yeah. But then, so the way I would deal with that is anytime we were in a public place, I would start to sing happy birthday, like it very loudly, even when it wasn't their birthday. And like, so they knew like that was what I was like, ha, I just do that one line. Ha. And so they got kind of used to, I got them accustomed to being embarrassed, and they are now very.
That's amazing.
So you raise them to like make you happy.
I raise them to be my audience.
That's smart though. I mean, I'm sure you probably for the shows too, right? Like you're plucking from their mind. Like what's,
oh my God.
What are you into?
Yeah. One of my daughters actually had asked, like did something and it was like, don't, you know, she saw him, like, you can see like just a little glimmer in your eye when you get an idea. And she knows really well, she's really tuned in. And so it's like, she'll say something. No, don't put that in the show. First of all.
Don't put that in the show. Yeah, what a
not, like, that was not something I ever said to my dad. Don't put that in. Don't go down to the office and tell that to the secretary.
Don't put this in your Emmy award-winning show, Dad. It's so embarrassing. So
yeah, that I know that is such a weird. Did you guys ever have the? Do they deal with though? Like, remember when kids used to threaten you with like, "My dad's a cop, he'll beat you up," or like, "My dad's a fucking, I don't know, was on America." Now it's probably like, "My dad was on American Ninja Warrior. Like, he's got a six pack and he'll fuck your mom and break up their marriage." And you're like, "Jesus, that's specific, Caleb."
I were very much like, "My dad will do clever wordplay as he's calling the authorities." My dad'll
punch up a script and fucking push you out of a job.
My dad will say something super clever, barely audibly, so no one gets mad.
He'll be real passive aggressive, pay you a compliment, and then kind of take it back. Yeah, really hurting my feelings. But that's also like Hollywood. You don't really, your kids, Danny, aren't super Hollywood kids.
No. And I was like out in the South Bay. So, and my kids didn't go to school with like a lot of like showbiz kids, which I was sort of by design.
Oh, good move.
I remember like when I first moved to LA and I got invited to go to a Dodgers game, which I was like, I'm from Houston. I know being an Astros fan is not super popular, but
who cares? Everybody cheats. Go on.
But I ask a friend of mine when I was moving out here, she had a 10-year-old son and they gave me 4 tickets. And I was like, oh, I invite her son and her son to invite a friend. Like, I'm being the nice person because when I was moving, she let me use her car and shit like that. We are at this game and we had the best seats ever. And even somebody came down with the camera, like, we're going to put you on the big jumbotron. I'm like, oh, shit. Fucking Jenny's coming up hard, right? And these two boys are talking. And then one goes, well, remember last night we were on the jumbotron like 5 times because when we were here with London's dad. And I'm like, who the fuck is London's dad? And they're like, he was in a band. He played, he did the national anthem. He was like Guns and like Rose something. I was like, wait, Slash? God. Did you just call fucking Slash London's dad? Are you kidding me? Like,
oh,
is that
my God.
And they're like, yeah, he plays guitar and he played the national anthem. I'm like, what? You were here last night with fucking Slash? And then my jackass is like,
I know.
But I was like, welcome to London's Hollywood.
Dad. Oh, yeah. There's for sure. There's like, you know, Johnny Depp got that.
Oh, yeah. 100%.
You know, whatever his kids are. Yeah. The pirate guy came and did the national anthem. That's crazy. Yeah. The you both have been in LA for how long? I'm trying to compare our experiences
I've been 6 or 7 years for me.
Really? I've been here since 1988. So,
I was 10.
I'm older than all of you, but I graduated.
I'm fucking so old.
I just turned 57. I graduated in 86 and lived in New York for a year and then drove across country and the rest is history. But yeah.
I love that. I have probably, I don't know, 10 friends that I have heard their across country move stories. That to me is way more gangster than, well, look, anybody who moves to LA to try to do what we're doing is pretty crazy and is still doing it and has like, you know, started to kind of notch up the belt. Awesome. Because as we all know, once you get in, I think you don't really, I don't know, you develop thicker skin and you start to just become so gung-ho, right, that you're not really thinking about like plan B or not going full on into it. But like, I don't know, when I am around people, especially up back home, that for any little thing that they think is, you know, worthy of making a deal of, which by the way wasn't for so long, which is so fucked up that now you get the support when the first 5 years of just truly grinding with open mics and trying to make dumb YouTube videos and taking classes. And they're like, you still doing it? And I'm like, yeah. And they're like, oh, cause I haven't seen you on a billboard or any Bruce Willis movies. Yeah. It takes time, man. It's you don't just go into one CSI Miami audition and fucking become best friends with Spielberg. Oh, well, I'm not saying that, but like, I don't know, man, there's a lot of Subway commercials. Yeah. It's like, not, it doesn't work like that. Yeah. But like, there's a lot of channels. So, I don't know. Maybe it's your hair. Yeah, I don't think this is. I don't think we should be friends anymore. What? Ah, but you got me my kid. Nah, you shouldn't have kids, man. You're a piece of shit. All right. See, that's what I'm talking about. You are funny. You know, so it's like, once you get a little bit of anything for them to go, yeah, you always had it, man. You know, whatever. But for all of us, I'm sure we had, you know, those things that that got you like, all right, cool. I made the right choice with being out here, right?
Yeah. But it's really, I mean, it's scary, man. I mean, I had no plan B. I came out young. I've never wanted to do anything other than comedy. So it was
really?
Yeah. So like I came out here. It also helped that I was like, absolutely, like I was pretty like miserable in New York. Like my girlfriend dumped me. My dad had thrown me. I really had nothing. And so like I went and I had a PA opportunity out here to be a production assistant on some show. So I like got out here in 3 days and did that. So it was like, yeah, I was just like, I couldn't have saved, but I got lucky. I mean, a lot of shit had to go right. I make it out with a bunch of guys. Not everybody lasted here, you know?
Yeah. Well, mine was like weird because I like graduated from college. I was a television sports producer for like
Shut up.
6 years. And then I was a television news producer. And then I was like, you know, I'm going to try comedy. And then I moved out to LA.
Wow. I would have thought you were comedy from the get go. That's crazy.
Like on the side, I would always like, I was in Austin, San Antonio, Houston. I would write like for freebie magazines, write like comedy, you know, little things. And I always wanted to do it. And then I was like, you know, I'm going through a divorce. My dad had passed away. And it was just like, you know what? Fuck it. I'm going to try it. If it doesn't work, I've got like 13 years of experience behind me. I can go back to news
I find that to be harder. Like I've worked with a lot of, so I've worked with, like for me, from the time I was like 5 years old and I heard like the word, like I figured out that, oh, people write funny things and you can be a comedian. And it was like, oh, like there was nothing else I ever wanted to do. But I have friends who are great writers who at 32, sitting at a fairly well-paid legal, like law firm, or as a stockbroker, or one of those things, and they were just miserable doing it, and just said fuck it, and went home at night and wrote spec scripts, and then like to me that's the thing that I admire, because I feel like I didn't have much of it. Like I was going through this, so I was either going to make it or just like, you know, be a really fucking sad story. But to actually like leave something you have going.
Yeah,
because you're not happy and honoring that and seeking it out.
Well, mine was like a little slightly different because when Twitter had come about, yeah. and that was what helped me. Like all of a sudden,
oh, really?
I was just I remember like being in the newsroom and they're like, okay, there's a new thing called Twitter. Everyone has to get on it. Like the same way with Facebook or MySpace, because it's sick, but like, oh, some kid wrapped his car around a tree. We can pull a picture off Facebook. Like you just have.
Yeah. To oh yeah.
So I get on Twitter and I don't really know what it is, but then I started seeing like comedians I like and they're just writing jokes. I'm like, sweet, I'll do that too. So I just started writing jokes and all of a sudden it was like, oh, I have 10 followers, 100, like 1,000. And then all of a sudden people were like, hey, this agent wants to meet you. And I signed with like WME. I was still like a news producer.
Wait a second. What were some of the first tweets you did that got a little bit of traction? Like something topical, probably, right?
You know what the difference between New York and LA is? No,
yeah, it's just so much.
Like, it was actually like kind of mocking it. There was one that I remember, like I was mocking Facebook, and it was like, sorry, you know, whores turned soccer mom. Like I'm not praying for your kid that has the sniffles or wet farts.
Yeah,
but it was something like that. That
yeah,
and it was something that I remember thinking I thought was funny, but no one else would probably get it. Because up until that point, I was really writing jokes that I thought I was like writing for other people. I wasn't writing what I thought was funny. And the moment I wrote something that I thought was funny, all of a sudden it got like noticed. And I'm like, oh my God, all these people. I remember Patton Oswalt like retweeting a bunch of shit. Yeah. And I'm like, holy shit, I've got, like, how did I have, like, you know, 10,000 followers and 15? All of a sudden, it was, 100. It was crazy. So I was able to, like, get something started by that. You know, it wasn't like I just moved out with no plan or, you know, whatever. I was writing a pilot. Like, I had sold a pitch to ABC and I had no idea what I was doing, but like, all right.
It's a great lesson.
My story is weird. I like kind of
stuck into the back door. Every story is weird though. Like there's no, I mean, if you were to, I would love to see on a piece of paper, the stories that every person who has heard of Hollywood has heard about. And you don't even remember where you heard it, whether it was from a friend's dad who did one improv class, but feels like he did Hollywood, you know, and he's just like, you know, Hollywood, you know, the Ashton Kutcher was in his boxes at a coffee bean and some gay guy found him. And you're like, all right, dude, not at all what happened. But there are a handful of those actual stories. I don't know where they are or what, how much truth is to them, where somebody did, you know, got discovered pretty quick, and discovered meaning like, again, like seeing some agent, right? Or, you know, high profile show, you know, running it. Yeah. And you see someone and you go, hey, are you, you got a cool look. And they rolled the dice and was like, you want to audition for this? And they got it and went on to be a cool person and a great actor. Right. How many truly are those, right? Like
very few,
but like, but it does happen. So just because it does happen, just like the lottery, people are like, and that's what is kind of amazing and shitty and depressing and exciting about LA and our business is that like, there's always that like, but hey, man, like Dumb and Dumber Jim Carrey, you're telling me there's a chance, you know, like it's why it is awesome.
Yeah, the safer bet I always tell people is like, try becoming excellent. Like try
totally
actually good at the thing.
Control, I mean, what you can control, right?
It's still a long shot, but at least like if you get, because the other story, the, like you were asking who goes on to have that, they get discovered and go do it and then like are great and like thrive. There, so those are very rare. But what's still rare, but slightly more common than that, is that person does get that break and is not ready for it and has nothing else to follow it. And that was their high point and you're out. And that happened quite a bit. I mean, we saw that, like, there was a year where it was like a very disturbing year because I had a couple pilots going that did not make it because they were giving it to they wanted to take a shot on some Vine stars. And so like every network was trying to do like, oh, this guy was on Vine. It's like, and I can't remember their names. I don't know why. Oh, I know why, because they never made it on the air. But you know, and that's not to say somebody who came out of that world couldn't go on and be funny, but
yeah,
ready for your fucking shot. Like, with me, like I've been writing jokes forever. So when I got my shot randomly, I was like, I was at least, it wasn't like the idea of writing a joke wasn't new to me. I hadn't just like said one funny thing and then got the gig. It was like, I wasn't like, I'm not saying I was an expert joke writer at that point, like I am now, the best in the world. But back then,
Let's talk about it.
But I recently watched Patrice O'Neill, the documentary they just had about Patrice. It was great. And there was this particular part in it where he's talking about how he pissed so many people off in Hollywood. Like he just didn't want to, you know, like
play the game, right?
He did not want compromise. He wanted to do what he wanted to do. And he tells the story of he's like, you know, like you go on a roller coaster and they're ticking, you're going up and everyone's cheering, it's great and everything. And then you go down, you're done. And then there's this long line and you're like, I got to get back in line to get back on this roller coaster. And that ride wasn't even that fucking good. You know, all my money flew out of my pockets when it went down.
That's so funny.
It was the funniest, like actually perfect, you know, representation of what
incredible.
It's like.
Oh yeah.
You have your moment and then you go down and you're like, okay, I want it again. I to think that, was that great? Well, I'll stand in this fucking line again with all these idiots.
what would you like? Is there a moment for you, Adam, that you think like that was the moment? Like that was like a break where it's like, okay, now people are like, no, like I am employed. I'm not talking just about stand up, but like, it was there like a, was there a spot you did or was there like a, was there something where it's like, I have that, you know, or do not.
Let me tag onto that too. I think I know what you're saying. Like, was there also something that you thought was going to be your big break and it wasn't? And then something that turned, you know, randomly.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'll just start at being in USC, moved into my fraternity sophomore year. Max Winkler, now director, Henry Winkler's son, great kid, smart kid, funny kid. And he had a show with Jonah Hill at the time for MTV, like a pilot, because they're best buds, where it was like something Jonah's house, and it was going to be like a talk show. And they, Max, I was the funny guy in the frat and the only kid in the theater school. I used to get wigs and do, like, during pledge week for the other kids, I was, like, not into the fucking with guys, but I was like, I'll do it in a funny way. I'll treat it as an acting exercise. Such an actor piece of shit, right?
What frat, just so I know?
A.E. Pie, the Jew frat.
I know the A.E.
Pie. Oh, man. A.E. High, as we were called. We made bongs out of shofars, baby.
A.E. High.
Shabbat Shalom. All right.
Oh, 5 foot bongs. I mean, it was great. Yeah. And so Max is like, we're gonna have a comedian, a comedic correspondent. Oh shit, Danny, you all right?
No, keep going. I can still hear. I'm just gonna adjust my light. Keep going.
Hilarious. By the way. So Hollywood does not even want to be on cam to adjust the light, but also
it was also falling down. It's like my power was going down.
You just bought the ring light too, didn't you?
I did. I just bought it, but it like soaked up my power and I don't have my thing. So I'm charging. Hold on one second.
Would be a great scene in a show or movie where like three people are on. This immediately makes me think of Brad Williams meeting his wife on a threesome app, because it's like,
oh, that's so funny.
Imagine in a show or a movie where three people are on a Zoom and one person has, whether it's a light fiasco or a stroke, something to take them out of the equation. Yeah. And there's two left, but we can't, let's like say we couldn't hear you right now, Danny.
Yes, God forbid.
Jenny and I are pros and homies, so we'd pick it up and keep going. But what if it was like a thing where it was like, maybe a pandemic Zoom dating, speed dating thing. And so all of a sudden it's like, and we were both counting on that third person to carry the weight of the convo.
And then you're stuck.
Right?
That's actually, we should write this short film. This is good.
All right.
If you like blacked out, you kept your, you meant to mute yourself, and then we could hear like a full fight going with like.
That's what I'm saying. At some point, you and I get to know each other, and then Danny's shit comes back on, and we're like, should we do something? And maybe if we can, we go over there, and then it's a whole either continuation of the film where it's like still during COVID, so like wear the mask, break into his place, figure out what's going on. He's been tied up. It turns out to be some like whole sex thing and not a burglar. So we're like,
if Danny comes back and his nose
I'm getting it.
Something.
Hold on. No, I think it's really.
He's crying and his nose is bleeding.
Nosebleed is always funny.
I should have come back without a shirt on.
I mean, I know you're. This is very anticlimactic, if I'm being honest.
All right. Okay. I cut off this story.
For good reason, man. Your light went out at the right time. It was the universe telling us abort story. But I don't even remember what the fuck I was talking. Something about
Oh, you were talking about Brad Williams and his wife.
No, before that.
Well, that's that's
like, you're asking you. Oh, I got it.
No, you're
funny guy in the fraternity. You think this thing is going to happen?
Right. Max has a show, Jonah's House. He goes, I want you to be the comedic correspondent that we blindfold, put into an airplane, drop him off anywhere, and you just have to do man on the street shit, whatever. I'm like, oh, yeah. I did a bunch of that shit in high school. And the first year at SC was like going out with a buddy who had a camera to do shit like that around the campus. Uh-huh. And I just was like, you know, not probably wouldn't be, wasn't ready for it, quote unquote, but was excited and confident enough to go like, all right, I could do that. Right. And you have to, it's just all that delusion that you need for any of this. Right.
Of course.
And Max, and it just truly, in my head, I was like, wow, this is going to be my story. This is how it starts. Yeah. Fucking A-Pie, the Jew frat. Here we go. Meet the Fonz's son, Jonah Hill, like, you know, soon to be star. Hadn't done shit yet, by the way. Wasn't Jonah Hill at all.
Yeah.
And he's just my buddy Jonah. We all kicked it, did a couple hangs. It was like awesome. And then that just didn't happen. I guess the pilot either, I think they didn't get it or, and I didn't understand at this point yet that what Max was telling me was just kind of like, this is the idea. But it was painted a little bit like, we're going to do this. And then I think I created in my head, well, you're the Fonz's son. Of course, this is going to actually happen.
They can't say no to the Fonz's son.
No, you can't.
Right.
Fonz is going to come in there. He's going to hit a jukebox and you're on the air.
By the way,
I'm sorry. Do you not know who I am? I know the Fonz's son.
Wait, now does he bring his own jukebox, Danny, or is there one set in there as a prop and he hits it before he leaves?
I think he has a jukebox.
I think he's contractually obligated to have a jukebox.
And then on the way out, he thinks, I should check my hair. I should comb it. Looks at it. It's fine. Yeah. And then he doesn't do it.
Henry Winkler. So just to piggyback on that, didn't realize how this tied together. First TV job I got was 2007. It was a guest star on According to Jim. And in my head, 2007, and they've made it the season premiere. So I'm going up at the improv. I'm going to the host. They're going, hey, any credits? I go, yeah, guest star According to Jim. And they go, cool. I go, yeah, yeah, season premiere.
You're welcome.
Yeah. Jim, the other Belushi, still crushing it.
Yeah.
My mom, by the way, butchering it to all the Jews back home in Seattle. My son's on the way Jim does things.
Like, the way Jim does things.
My son's on the Jim Belushi show. Also wrong. My son's on the not John Belushi program. Mom, shut your fucking mouth.
It's Jim! Exclamation point.
Yeah. 5 exclamation points is better than 4. Also not the name of the show. So I get this job and I just in my head I go again like I was with the Max thing, I go, here we go. According to Jim, we're done. I'm
like, fucking wait for it. Here we go.
Not even joking. So fucking delusional. And I'm pulling up to the lot to tape. And I'm like, I should call Henry. He'd been nice enough to. Yeah. He gave me a PA job on Hollywood Squares when he was EPing it. When this is like when Martin Mull, I think, was the center square, and John Ritter RIP was on it a bunch, and he let me PA, and that was great. So then he was like, anytime you need advice on something, call me. And anytime I would, he'd be, you know, Adam Ray, get to the point, you know. And I was always just like, stammering on. And so I called him. I'm pulling him to the lot. And I'm like, Henry, you're the sitcom guy, the god, like any advice is my tape day. You know, I've done stand up a little bit, but so the live audience isn't really scaring me. Thank God. Thanks to 20 reps. But still, like, this is my first thing. And in my head, I'm like, if you fuck this up, if you fuck up the How Jim Does Things show, you're never going to get a second shot.
No.
So and I'm doing a bunch of YouTube videos at the time. And I used to want to be a Muppeteer. I love the Muppets. Jim Henson is a fucking, top tier guy for me. So I had, legend. And I have these puppets in my back and my fucking broken down Ford Escape with bungee cords holding on the bumper. I'm pulling into the CBS Radford lot. I got weird puppets in the back. I have a fat suit that I use for some YouTube sketch. The security guard's going through it. I'm leaving a message for Henry. I look in the rearview mirror. I look up. She's holding up the fat suit and the puppets. And she goes, let me guess, you single? And I was like, yeah, I am. What does that have to do with? I'm very nervous. Can you put those down? Are there guns? She's like, no, but there's some weird ass shit back here. And I was like, all right, thank you. I go through. I check into the green room. I'm getting in there, getting all set. I get a voicemail from Henry. He goes, Adam Ray, Henry Winkler. He goes, congrats on the gig. This is fantastic news. Treat Mr. Belushi like an emperor. You're not there to fill space. They picked Adam Ray because they love Adam Ray. They need Adam Ray. They want Adam Ray. If you think of something funny, say it. You're not there to fill space. If you think of something funny, say it. All the best. Cut to the show. Wish I'd saved the voicemail. Cut to the show. Taping it. It's going great. I was the like water guy that Jim was having some issues with Courtney Thorne Smith. So he forged some sexy letters from the water boy to her to make her feel better about herself. Classic, I come in with 2 giant Aquafina bottles, dropped them on the first take, exploded everywhere, water all over the fucking set.
Oh no.
Director's looking at me like, we should have picked another guy. And I'm like, yeah, probably. And so they clean it up. Belushi's like, don't worry about it. Gives me a smoke break. I'm like, hell yeah, man. And he's like, all right, we're not friends. I'm like, yeah, you got it, man. So then they clean it up. Everything goes great. First scene I do, get some laughs. Jim looks at me, goes, nailed it. I'm like, awesome. Felt good. Got some laughs. Just like any, right, Jen? Like any new stage, whatever. You get a few laughs, you're in.
Okay. Yeah.
So then cut to the last scene, and there's a bunch of writers and EPs, as you know, around, like the thing, everything's trying to like rewrite a couple of jokes here and there. And I hear Henry in my head as I'm sitting there on the sidelines, and he's like, if you think of something funny, say it. So I'm just like, fucking, here's my Rudy moment. So I just go, and what about this? And all of them just turn and go, what?
Oh, my God.
And in my head, I go, and I hear Henry bubble in my head and just go, swing and a miss. And then later I call Henry. He goes, how did the gig go? And I go, great, man, except for the very end. Classic comic fashion. I push to the side any sort of victory from the experience. And I'm like, yeah, that last scene was fucking, I don't think I'm ever going to work again. I pitched a joke. Belushi fucking blew his cigar smoke in my face during the taping. And I'm like, everything's fucked up. And I go, I pitched a joke like you said, and they didn't like it. And Henry goes, well, it has to be funny. Come on.
I adore Henry.
But I bet you and Jim laugh about it all the time when y'all have dinner and text. And
we're LinkedIn friends. We're Tinder friends. He bought me that painting. I gave it to my stepdad.
He made it. Yeah.
The minute you told me this, the idea of having like a guest star when we're trying to fix a scene, come in and offer a joke at that moment. Like, I'll take jokes from anywhere, but like in those moments, it better be like the world's greatest joke.
1,000%
for you. Because I was like, oh boy, is Henry setting you up for failure? Like, I was just waiting. Like, this was the bomb under the table that the audience knows about, but the actors don't. When you dropped that voicemail, I've been like, oh, how is this going to blow up?
Oh, yeah.
Like, and Henry Winkler fucked you over. That's just that's the name of your bio right there.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Hey, fuck. Yeah. Yeah, that, I mean, but again, like, and the whole point of that story, just that was a true, here we go. And then I'd say the actual thing that gave me like a validated, you know, graduate in 05, validated, this is eight years, by the way. So that was 2007, according to Jim, 2 years after I graduated, didn't book anything of significance, maybe a couple things here and there. Couple of Washington Mutual voiceover commercials, maybe a Verizon Industrial where I'm like the guy being like, hey, don't touch a woman's tit unless she asks you. You're like, so I was some sort of sexual harassment video.
Good
and then
tip,
I,
by the way, it's a good tip for our viewers.
It's awesome.
I watched it when I hired at ABC News.
It was regional, but they used it in all the stores. Yeah. So then I got the heat with our buddy Mike McDonald. And yeah, that was probably when I just was like, all right, if I don't do anything else, I got to be in a big comedy movie with some superstars.
Yeah.
Experience Sandra Bullock grinding all over you. I mean, how lucky are you?
Awesome. Right. And I mean, young fat Adam was like, it did get better. And it was her and Melissa couldn't have been cooler. We're still homies. Met Mike McDonald on the first day. I love him like a brother.
Yeah.
I mean, Mike Rappaport, first day, been very great since then. But the experience was so awesome. Did stand up in Boston while I was there. Sandra came to a show one night, was in the Boston Globe the next day. And just the Paul Feig, still a homie, like all of it was just.
You belonged in that moment.
Totally. Yeah. And to go back to
you. Definitely do, because you keep getting invited back too. Like, you're in the circle. You're in the you're in the click, man.
I mean, in the clit or the what you say?
The click.
Yes.
You're in the clit.
But also the clit too, maybe. I don't know. I don't want to.
By the way,
presumptuous.
Wait.
This episode's going to be called In the Clit.
Danny just said that as if he was like, I got some insider information from my kids. It's now. You now say you're in the clit if you're in the clit.
No, it's what they're saying.
They'll finally parents think I'm cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
But so the whole thing was so dope that I was like, man, if I don't do anything else, I'm truly going to chalk this up and live it up. And Mike and I went to like a Red Sox game, and then we'd go get, you know, dinner and drunk if we had a couple off days. But you're right on the thing you said, where it was like everything you do prior to that sets you up for that. And I wasn't, like I probably would have been for other things, like that Mac show, wouldn't have been ready at all. It would have been a disaster. I would have I just was much more centered into who I was. I'd been through a lot more of just the grinding, and I was just ready for it. Still very nervous. First day was the scene where I'm holding guns at Melissa and Sandra's head, and Paul says, you can improvise. So, I mean, I'm like, all right. Like, so I'm thinking of like eight alts in my head, and I'm just like, pick one of those, man, and just fucking go for it. Or maybe don't. I think I didn't on the first one, and then just did from there on out. And they both, after that first take, when I did an improv and it stayed in, and then they both, after the take, looked at me, and Sandra went, that was funny. And Melissa was like, fucking, all right, this will be good. This will be good. Yeah. And I was like, all right, cool. I'm not going to get fired, I guess. But but so then that was, and then again, it's, and then you learn from that after that, like, and Bobby Lee, you know, who took me on the road for a little bit, would tell me very candidly, like, you're not going to fucking blow up from this. He's like, you're going to come back to the Comedy Store. You're going to get right back to your 12:45 spots. And it's right back to it, man. He's like, go have a fun time. Live it up. Get better from it. All the stuff that you should do. But it's not like, and that was nice. A little abrasive, but also like, no, good advice.
A reality shot for sure.
Totally. And I'm glad he actually said it, because I did, you know, you can't help but just, Sandra's like, I'm going to come to your comedy show tonight. Cause I was trying to be active out there in Boston. And I had a few friends that I was like, oh, cool. I bet I can use this movie thing to get some spots and like go up. And so, yeah, I'm on cloud nine, and just a very good lesson in everything of just, man, like, again, chalk it up for that, get what you get out of it. And then on to the next thing, man.
And now you don't have to use the According to Jim intro.
I still do, actually. It's actually all I use.
Well, I mean, if you've been on a class like According to Jim, I mean, you're going to leave with it. I don't care how long it is. I mean, you think, what, did Orson Welles stop mentioning Citizen Kane later? No.
No.
This is your Citizen Kane.
You know him from According to Jim. That's how I should have introduced you.
So we're at the end of the show, and this is where we actually talk about the things we've been watching. And I want to know, Adam, what are you watching now? Like, what are the things you like, anything you want to recommend or that you've been obsessed with or that you've like passed the time with? Or
Got into Dr. Pimple Popper. Wish I hadn't have.
I did one of those. Yeah, that's rough.
I'm just like, how do you go through a majority of your life getting to like 38, 42, and when you're like, it's time to remove the foot from my neck. And you're like, yeah, probably would have been good to try to check in on that at like six, but I get it. Like, that's an expensive surgery. I'm waiting for somebody to have like, I don't know, like
twin.
There's a conjoined twin. Thanks, Jen. Your fucked up mind went right there. And I did, all I had to do was do
where the eyes move.
Yes. So, and then the camera just, and even the producer of Dr. Pimple Popper is just like, this is great. This is great. No, this is great. Conjoined twin. This is great. We can use this. So what we'll do is we'll start on the doc. We'll pan down to the head. We'll start on you. You say, I want this removed. We'll pan down to the head and your brother will go, hey, come on, or whatever you say. And then you say, can you pop this guy?
Have fun with it. I think you want to get like a no. I think we've here's a Saturday Night sketch. We could just get it on right now. It's like
have Dr. Pimple Popper with
takes
it.
Off
Henry Winkler. Henry Winkler. Off.
What is that guy? Klaatu from Total Recall. Wasn't that the?
Oh yeah. The dude. Yeah. I'm watching. So that a little bit of that. In all seriousness, I just watched that. Well, look, I did Tiger King like everybody. If we want to go the way back, if you want to go all the way back, I did it, you know, enjoyed it for the observational purposes. Yeah. Didn't enjoy the way, you know, you get to see some creatures treated. That's pretty crazy. But
I was a fan of that.
But also like, you know, surprised. No, like as soon as he cut to Joe Exotic and he was like, you know, a shirt can be pants if you want it to be, or whatever he fucking said. You're like, oh yeah, this guy's going to the beat of his own drum. I loved the morning show, and I know some people didn't. I don't know, man. You love it from the probably even more so from the news world, right?
Right. Oh, I watched it with different eyes. And I
totally.
Always, you know, but I thought it was great. I thought it was really
good. Me too. My fiance and I just watched, what's the Katherine Heigl? Firefly. Yep.
Yeah.
Sarah Chalkin, Katherine Heigl. That's pretty good. Acting was good. I'm not a big, you know, I'm a big sports guy, so there's a lot of that going on. But, you know, my Seattle Supersonics were taken away from Seattle, moved to Oklahoma in 2009. So my basketball fandom, which is my favorite sport, has been taken down a peg. But sports still do it for me. I watched with my mom the other night some American Idol auditions, which was fun. Still love me some good Idol auditions. Not the same. They're definitely trying to make Katy Perry the Simon, and it's not happening.
Yeah, I find it. I find it painful.
It is painful. Lionel Richie, dude. Right. I mean, look. I get why he's on there because he's. What else is he going to be doing? Like Jack in the Box commercials? Right. Actually, now that I say that, exactly what he should be doing. I love Curb. I go back and that's my go-to fall asleep show. You know, the M Family is a fucking legendary program, so definitely watch that. I've got, in all seriousness, Office, Modern Family, Curb, Weeds, Family Guy are like my. I'm tired of scrolling.
Yeah.
What was the second one there? I just want to understand.
It was Weeds. What, Modern Family?
Family Guy.
You know what you did.
Jenny, how about you?
Okay, the Patrice O'Neill doc.
I definitely want to watch that.
Yeah, came on Friday. That was really good. And really, like, I very honest, too. Like, they didn't try to, you know, flower everything up in depth, as so many people do. Like, it was a very honest documentary. And then I watched that fucking Woody Allen one last night.
Yeah.
Have y'all seen
what?
That? The,
no,
the
what?
HBO, the Allen versus Pharaoh.
No, I haven't.
Whatever.
Seen
it's a 4-part series that's on HBO. The first part was on last night. Highly recommend it. It's super creepy, but very good. I tried Bridgerton.
Yeah.
Can I be honest? No, thanks.
No, I was like, does it get better? Is that what they say to the kids? The
boys? I just
like, what, no, it's horrible.
What is the consensus on time period shows?
I mean,
period piece.
I'm not a period. Anytime somebody goes, it's a period piece.
I just can't, like, I don't know. I don't like, I even tried the, not Abbey Road,
Downton Abbey.
Downton Abbey. Not bad. But then at the end of the day, Handmaid's Tale, we got into, and that was fucked up and awful, but addicting. Yeah. But that was still very, like, timely. And that's, I think, why it was so, right? But even there's an Armie Hammer pre-cannibalism movie that I watched that was just two people drinking tea, and the way they're talking, I'm just like, I guess it is, you can't relate, but also I don't fucking care about that time. Like, right. It just seemed so boring.
To me, it all depends on the thing. Like, it depends.
Yeah.
It's actually contingent on, like, the people. Like, I don't like a lot of period, but there was, like, that movie that I really liked, The Favorite, that was funny because it was contemporary. It, like, had a contemporary theme. So I don't know. I'm very cultured. I mean, that's the thing.
Well, like, I liked, I remember when you told me first, Danny, to watch Queen's Gambit, and you actually said it was kind of a period piece, and I'm like, but it wasn't like really.
It was of a time in the 60s. And so.
Yeah, that's not a period.
Now,
it was really good. I loved it. I fucking plowed through that one.
So now, if you're going to pitch Queen's Gambit, is it, what I've heard is chess is the backdrop.
Yeah,
right. Which every part of me would go, no, I don't want to watch a fucking series.
Bacha takes drugs, plays chess well. That's what I would say.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah.
But it's
performance enhancing chess drugs.
Okay. Before I go, I'll just tell you something I was watching.
Yeah.
Rewatching. Please.
It's just an old. I got back into it. I don't know if you're familiar with it's a British sitcom that was on, and I watched it a while ago, and I just started. It's only 6 episodes, but it's Garth Marenghi's Dark Place. And it's on YouTube. Okay. I recommend this so fucking. So Garth Marenghi's Dark Place. Garth Marenghi. So it basically is this. There's a science fiction or horror writer played by this guy, Garth Marenghi, who did a show in the early 90s, allegedly, that was too revolutionary to put on television that he's airing and they are talking about it. It's with this guy, Richard Iowati's in it. Matt Berry is in it. And it is the most horribly acted show, and they're jump cuts. And then they cut out to interviews. And it's just like, it is three levels of meta with the silliest fucking, it's just, I remember watching it and loving it. And now it's just like Garth Marenghi's Dark Place, six episodes. Because I always hear, like, when people talk about, like, real comedy nerds talk about, like, influential shows, that's one of them. And it's worth seeing.
What network or?
Find it on YouTube. It's all on YouTube. That's
cool.
It.
Wait, real quick. I got to know before we wrap up. YouTube rabbit hole. What's that been like? I want to say, you know, I want to know the one that is your, like, your go-to and one that you found yourself down that you were like, there's no way I ever thought I'd be here. And here we are.
Oh, there's so many.
For me, I've been going to, there's these guys, Frankenstein's Lab, and they do the reaction videos.
Oh, yeah.
And to I what? Can go down to clips, stand-up clips.
Oh,
Frankenstein's Lab. Put that. It is so. And they're guys in Houston too. They're just super chill. They're always high, and they just sit. Oh, they're so. I feel like I'll go to that if I can't sleep, and I'm just like, they're like my friends now. I'm like, let's see. That's, oh, good. They just watch a Bill Burr clip. I want to watch this.
Fucking brilliant. That's all I want to do is, oh, man, yeah, dude.
I link that so I can remember that.
It's really, really funny. The guys are just so, and they don't do that thing where they pause a lot. Sometimes those reaction videos, start watching something and someone will, they stop just let it commentary. Play. Yeah. They just let it go. And it's really funny just to watch them enjoying comedy. And that's something that, like, as a stand-up, I love watching people.
I love that too, man. Yeah. I'm definitely going to check. I'm going to check those out tonight.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll send them my According to Jim scenes and they can do.
I wonder if that'll be, like, if the reaction so intense. It could be. Adam, it's been a delight to meet you.
You as well, Dan.
Very funny. Anything you want to plug real quick while we're coming up?
I've got an album that dropped a month ago called I'll Take It From Here. It's all crowd work. I did 14 shows in Vegas at the Laugh Factory, the Tropicana, and took a lot of
fun week to stay there.
It's fun and it's bullet in the mouth. But the shows are awesome because it's like the Comedy Store. You're getting all walks of life, all types of people. And I really went through all the shows and found stuff, spent hours editing it to where it sounds like one full show. And there's callbacks to a guy, an Uber driver who came with three young girls that invited him to the show. That gets called back two or three times. There's a couple that had an arranged marriage, a couple that fell asleep, a sleeveless leather vest cowboy bull rider from Texas. Then you got a white rapper in the front row named Carl. I mean, there's just all this shit. Then drunk people yelling stuff out. And so it's wherever you get albums, I'll take it from here. And then Young Rock is on NBC right now, and I'm playing Vince McMahon, and we'll pop up in the next few episodes. And then AdamRayComedy.com for tour dates. I'm in Texas three times in March, and then San Diego, West Palm Beach, and Kansas City, and a few other spots. And the podcast about last night, which is out on iTunes. Sans Brad.
Either you're checking out Adam Ray's stuff or you're a fucking idiot. And I think we all agree about that. I mean, I
100%.
You would just you be a monster. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Adam. This was so
honored.
Fun.
Jenny, I love you. Danny, great to have you as a new friend in the Rolodex, man. This was so fun.
I enjoyed it too. I'm sorry about the light.
Dude, fuck it. We'll edit that out, dude. We'll edit you out, actually.
We'll see you next week on
Game. All right.